Good morning, Rabbi Sai. We were discussing yesterday the inyan of Nikif and Makif, two people who are involved in the haircut, the barber who's giving the haircut and the person who's having the haircut. And we said that if the person who's having the haircut participates in the activity, he moves his head in, you know, as and when required by the he nods this way, nods that way, bends his head downwards and upwards, then he is chayev. And if he does, if he could hypothetically remain completely still, then there would still be an issa to have his payas cut off, but there wouldn't be a korban. He wouldn't be chayev a korban b'shoigeg or a chatos. He would not be chayev a korban chatos b'shoigeg or malchus b'mezid. So therefore, it follows. What about a lady giving a haircut to a man? So it follows that if a lady was giving a haircut to a man, a lady does not have the issa of lo sakifu. Lo sakifu is an issa by men only, and there's no issa lo sakifu of a lady can have whatever haircut she chooses, and it doesn't make any difference. She doesn't have to worry about the payas. And as we'll learn, if she is a lady who, there are some ladies who have facial hair, there's no issa of giluach for her. But she is not allowed to give a haircut to a Yehudi, to a man, right? To a man or even to a boy. She can't give that haircut because she's over the issa of lo sakifu. She's not, she has no problem being a nikif, but she cannot be a makif or a makifo. She can't be, she can't give a haircut to a man. What about, so therefore, a lady, a Jewish lady, cannot give a haircut to a Jewish man or boy, but she can have a haircut herself, irrespective of what shape and what she uses. What about the goy? The goy has got the same halacha as the same halacha effectively as the lady, which means that the goy is allowed to give a haircut. Yeah, he has no issurim whatsoever. The goy is not chayev in the lav of lo sakifu, and therefore he is not. He doesn't have an issur maseya l'dei avera. I don't think a goy has an issur of lifnei aver. But the person who's having the haircut via the goy, or from a haircut who's having a haircut which is in a way that's also from a goy or from a lady, that person is the nikuf. The nikuf, again, if he's totally still and doesn't take any part, then he's over an issa, and if he has actually taken part, then he's actually chayev. So therefore, a lady has no issa to give a haircut to a boy. A Jewish lady has the issa of being makif, of giving a, or makifo. Yeah? She has the issa of giving the haircut, but she doesn't have the issa of having the haircut. The goy has no issa to give the haircut, or himself to have a non-Jewish haircut. That's not a problem for him either. But the problem there is only the nikuf. There's only the problem of the person who's actually having the haircut.
Tattoos. Yeah? Goy gives the yid a tattoo.
Yeah.
Who's hired?
Well, then the yid is not the yid is chayev, but the goy is not chayev. The goy doesn't have any issa. Goy doesn't have lavin. Yeah, the goy's got sheva mitzvahs b'nei noyach, and he doesn't have lavin. So therefore, there's no issa for him to give you a haircut, whatever he does, with a razor in the wrong place, in the wrong shape, etc., etc. But the problem is the yid. Yeah, Masha A came with a Jewish lady. She can't give a haircut to a yid. She could give a non-Jewish haircut to a goy, but a Jewish lady can't give a non-Jewish haircut to a yid, right? She can't give to her child. A lot of ladies give haircuts to their own children. They have to be careful. They have to keep within the rules because they still, although they can be a nikuf, although they themselves have no issa, that a lady can have any hairstyle that she likes, so she can do it in any way that she likes, but nevertheless, she can't do it to a Jew.
Started at Saraway, Northwest London, Monday, Yud Tes Cheshvan, 10th of November, Moreno Rav, Rabbi Rafi Gass and Shlita, the halachic debate over the synagogues of Gush Katif. This week's Torah is one of the family Brody, the Chavetzimus of Mitzvah, Tzvi Brody and the Riyor, take place this Shabbos, Emir Tzashem, Heat Rotten Shizku, Harob, Uskanab, Rav Nachas, Semenu, Kalotzehem, it's also Lud Nishmas, Miyasaid, Rabbi Yosef Dov, Ben, Rub. Shimon Michal Tzvi Itzkovitz Zichrono Livrocho.
Boker Tov Lekulam. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I know that Josh is bringing the sorceries to Makor, which I sent him. Because what I would like to do to you, with you today, it might take a few sessions. Josh has been trying to get me here to speak for many months, but it's just I'm always quite busy and always away. Is maybe just actually learn through a tshuva, which is, to the best of my knowledge, the only tshuva that was written at the time. And we'll talk about that in a second. But let me just give the background to the story. As we know that in August this past year, this past few months back, was the 20th anniversary of the expulsion of what they call the Natkut of Gush Katif. Gush Katif, for those that do not know the story, just briefly, was a block of sort of 21 Israeli communities in the southern Gaza Strip, which is dominating the news for the last 2 years. It was established sometime between the 1970s and 1990s. About 9,000 Jews lived there. Most of them were farmers in thriving agricultural industries. You may remember the lettuce that the Jewish world ate every Pesach, which came from there. They pioneered all this idea of creating crops, you know, without growing in the ground. And the Nakut was proposed by Ariel Sharon in 2003. Essentially, the unilateral disengagement plan of all Israeli military presence and all civilians from the Gaza Strip and 4 settlements in northern Samaria. And what was his reasoning behind it, which was very controversial, was to reduce the friction between the Israelis and the Palestinians, to improve Israel's international standing after years of violence because of the Second Intifada that was happening at the time. He wanted to consolidate Israel's borders and security focus, and he claimed that by holding on to Gaza, yeah, it wasn't sustainable, demographically or military. But for many of the Jews that lived in Eretz Yisrael, especially those, I would say, on the nationalist or on the religious right, this was seen as a very deep betrayal, because Sharon had been one of the main architects of Israel's settlement movement, and they viewed him as a hero, now turned against him. So what happened? The Knesset chose this arbitrary date of August 10th, for those that remember, in 2005, which turned out to be Tisha B'Av. Because that year, Tisha B'Av was on a Shabbat, so it's Nidche to the Sunday. And they realized that the juxtaposition of what was about to take place was just too extreme. So they pushed it off a day, and it was really on the 11th of August that year, which was Yud Aleph Av, that's when they began. And it became known as Gyurshek Gush Katif. For those that recall, I just arrived in the UK, I took over, I took into our shul in Boromod at the time. And I remember telling the Kila that it was almost like an extension of Tisha B'Av. The scenes, for those that saw the footage, of Jews having to uproot Jews from their homes, which was unprecedented. You know, the Jewish people have been thrown out of over 80 countries over the years. We know that, but it's always been by foreign enemy, not Jews to other Jews. It was exceptionally painful to watch. Not only the fact that the IDF did this with deep tears, but also the fact that, you know, Jews had built their lives there. They built their lives there, had to be thrown out in such a horrific way. And at the time, obviously the Rabbanut were consulted. And I struggled when I, after the attack in Manchester, we heard on Yom Kippur what took place, I decided to, my current community, to go through a series of shiurim on Kedushat Bet Knesset. And then this idea flagged up, well, what do they do with the shuls in Gush Katif? And I looked extensively, please correct me if I'm wrong, through the writings of Chacham Avadi Yosef. I thought he definitely would have addressed it. Couldn't find anything about it. Rabbi Tugendhat set up a group called the Geshmaka Piske Halacha about 15 years ago, which was about 300 rabbis on it. So I asked them from across the world. They said, somebody has to have a pen to tshuva about what happened in Gush Katif. Radio silence. Okay. And eventually I found one. Okay, and that's what I wanted to learn with you today, because it really is, it's illuminating in so many different ways. It was written by Rabbi Yaakov Ariel. Rabbi Yaakov Ariel was the former chief rabbi of Ramat Gan, a huge Tamid Hacham. And I guess he was positioned at that point, together with the Israeli Rabbanut, to deal with this very difficult question. And the reality is, when you read it, you can understand the pain and the heartbreak that he has when he pens this. And I wanted to read it together with you inside. Josh said he'll be here soon with the tshuva. So I'm just going to sort of elaborate as best as I can his words. But we'll go through this, and it's a long tshuva, and it might take several weeks to go through it. But I really feel that the lessons, the ideas, the concept that he relays over here are exceptionally important just for our yediyah generally to understand exactly what went on. Lema'aseh, what happened, before we go to tshuva, what happened? Does anyone know? What happened to the shuls in Gush Katif? There was hundreds of them, right? What happened?
thing. They left them and they destroyed them.
Right. They left them. Right, they left, and the IDF didn't destroy them themselves. So obviously, they took out all the Judaica, they took out the Shivrei Torah, they took out the menorot and all these things. You've seen the pictures, but the buildings themselves remained, and that was the question. So he says the following: Diyun ze nichta belev korea umurtach. I'm writing this particular tshuva with a heart that's broken. Lo rak bikar noseh hakoev, ele bikar mishum sherak benoseh shazeh shehares betekneset hayta hitchashvut beamdat halacha poskeh. Not only because of the fact that the topic itself is so sensitive, and you know, what do we do with the shuls? But regarding the fact, the destruction of the settlements of Gush Katif, the fact that also there are no replacement site. These communities were uprooted with nowhere to go. That didn't bother the government. You know, that wasn't a halachic question. You don't have to ask the Rav that shayla. הממשלה חשבה רק בנושא זה בעמדת הרבנות, משום שהריסת בית הכנסת נתפסה אצלה כנושא דתי, שיש הלכה מה לומר בו. So they approached the Rabbanut with the question, what do we do with the shuls of Gush Katif? Because that is, you know, that's dati, that has a religious aspect towards it. בעוד שהאספקטגיה המרכזים שנהגו, but all the other aspects of the disengagement נתפסו אצלם כנושאים פוליטיים. All the other aspects of the engagement were only political. That is not a rabbinical matter. Rabbis can't get involved with that. So therefore he said, I want to make it very clear, this false impression. Firstly, regarding the destruction of the shul, so Rova Poiskim, as we're going to see, according to the majority of the Poiskim, Eno Elamid Rabbanan, is only rabbinic. And Torah has something very clear to say about this. Beod sheet alelut v'adamut, but regarding the abuse and the harassment b'bnei adam by mankind al yedei hashachatam mipetahem, but throwing people out of their homes benechishut u'pezizut, with determination and with nesizut is my Hebrew is not brilliant, is like recklessness, like, you know, forcefully leloko regishut asharitem, with zero concern about what the future of these communities would be, lemegurehem lepanasadhem. How they're going to live, where they're going to live. Lechinuch yadahem, for the education of their children. Ushamirat kirotem. You built a kehillah. One of the most amazing things I think about, you know, Eretz Yisrael is that people struggle, you know, there's no kehillah life like you have here. There's so many shuls, but that, Gush Katif was one massive community. That fact that that was going to happen, that's not a Torah concern. That's one concern. In addition to the very severe isurim of the idea of being mevatel, the yishuv, the settlement of the land, and the isur lo techan, not allowing non-Jews to take possession of the land. So what were they doing? Essentially all the agricultural land that they had set up, which was exported to the world, they were handing that over to non-Jews. Yes, halacha has a lot to say about that. Benosav al isur lo techanem shechal gam al batim. Lo techanem is not only on land, but it's also on homes. The isur afkat sadot shekamim behen v'isot din adaris. What about the land itself where you were fulfilling the mitzvahs that are connected with the land of Eretz Yisrael? Look at the Gemara on Avodah Zarah on page Kaf Aleph. Lesarenu bechol hadirim shehashomu. All these things I've just mentioned, about 10 different halachic problems, lo huskara baya zeu klal. The government was not concerned about this at all. V'afal piken, kishenigva kashnu leabia adamatenu b'asher la'aretz bet ha'knesset. But at the end of the day, now that we've been asked, as the Rabbanut, to give our opinion as to what do we do with the synagogues in Gush Katif, lo yuchalnu litchamek menikita amada. We can't sort of sit back. Right? And we're going to discuss this in this tshuva. So that's how he sets up what he's about to do. So the first thing, he's heartbroken over the whole story itself. But the fact that the government sort of dissed the idea of everything else that's happening, which is the reality on the ground, also creates many halachic problems. Torah has so much to say about that. Tamsit ma'amar zeh huvara liyeda ve'edat rabbanim shedana b'shal azot. So he was asked to write the tshuva and it was passed on to the rabbanut. Yudivrei Torah ele ner zikaron. And therefore, this tshuva should be a memorial light lekilat hakodesh hamefored beGush Katif shenikathu beEvan, for the beautiful communities of Gush Katif, benevkot adain, who are still struggling al hemshech kiyumam kiyirot b'mekom acher, to continue their, you know, the fact that they were once a community, and We know what happened in the last 20 years. And we understand in retrospect with hindsight what a disaster it was. As David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Ki Elokim Yoshia Sion, that God will save Zion, V'yivnei Ari Yudah, and he will rebuild the cities of Yudah. V'yashvu Sham Yeshua, and you will settle there and you'll inherit it. V'zaro Avadah Yichalua, and your servants will inherit it. V'ahave Shemo Yishkenu Ba, and those that love his name will dwell in it. So he says the following in his conclusion. Im siyum akiratam shel Yishuv Tevel Katif, giyushei toshevehem v'arisa patehem, b'chodesh av, regarding what took place, hit'orer pulmus gadol. So there was a huge controversy. B'yachas arisat shel Bet Knesset. There were two schools of thought within the Torah world as what should be done with the shuls. And there's precedence for this throughout history, which we'll deal with. This particular action had to be done by the IDF, meaning that after several days of removing all the Jews, removing all the corpses from the cemeteries, and reinterring them, which itself involves so many halachas, but those who have learned the halachas, you have to sit shiva again when that happens. All these various notwithstanding all of that, what happens at the end? They had a few days left. What do they do? What do they do with the shuls that are left? So he said, "Amesadim ba'arisatano." Those that were in favor of the destruction said the following: "Shebelav hachi bateikanes aldin nidars bebidei hamon haPalestinim." Right? Those that were living in Palestine at the time, the Arabs themselves, anyway, is going to destroy the shuls. B'derech sheyesh ba pegia kashe bekolshei Yisrael bekomod Yisrael, which is a tremendous affront against the sanctity and the reverence of Kodesh Yisrael and Kavod Yisrael. U'kedeh limna azot, and therefore in order to prevent this, adif sheyudim ya'asu otam biyadahem. Better that the Jews should just demolish and destroy the shuls, b'derech mechubedet yoter, in a much more revered way. U'lematam ta'anu asholim, but what about those that are on the other side? What are they taina? She'en etzav en tuvunah yinag Hashem. Don't come with, you know, nice ideas like this. En hastaka la'avor biyadayim al isur. There's no righteousness in being in transgressing the isur hakaruch ben itiyasam she Bet Knesset, which is involved with the destruction of a Bet Knesset. Meaning that the hatred, animosity, venom, viciousness, violence that they would do to take, very much like the Nazis did. We know this very clearly. Anything that was related to Torah. Again, we have to understand, people, I often say this in Poland, the Nazis understood very clearly, and we saw this already a year before Kristallnacht, in Kristallnacht it wasn't only the destruction of the shops and the looting of properties and the killing of 100 Jews and 30,000 being sent to the camps. What else did they do? They destroyed all the shuls. Rabbis were forced to go in, read Mein Kampf from the pulpit. They took out the Sifrei Torah. And I say to my groups, I was there last week, we were in Piotrków, I said, like, why are they pumping bullets into an Aron HaKodesh? They valued it. Right? The principle was one bullet, one Jew. Why are you doing this? Because you see already a year before, it wasn't just about, you know, killing the Jews. The Nazis understood something. Ve'lo yischarim shemam od, it was about killing Judaism as well. Killing anything. And therefore you look through what happened in Krakow at the beginning of the war when they marched in. The rabbis are the first to get that. We understand that. Anything that had any kedusha, the viciousness that they attacked Sifrei Kodesh and in Lublin and the, because that it was about so that would have been the same thing. Palestinians hate the Jews, so they would have destroyed it with tremendous venom and viciousness and I don't know, horrific ways. Whereas the Jews could demolish it with tears in their eyes. It's a very different, you know. I think that's his point. But he says, but in the Maisa there's still an issue. There's a prohibition, as we'll see. There's Isurim. Afilu kedel esamsem bim adet begiyah bikvodam bechod Yisrael al lesar lifkoa beasmo bikdushayim. And therefore, the other school of thought was very violently opposed to this idea that we should not be doing this ourselves. Because at the end of the day, as we're going to see, there's a huge school of thought in the poskim that actually there is an issue involved, according to some, maybe even Issa Doraisa. Right? So these are the two schools of thought. And it's interesting, you know, we talk about these ideas, you know, sometimes theoretically. This was the Ma'aseh. This happened in 2005 and a decision had to be made. As you just said a second ago, the Maisa, what they did was they left the shuls and the Arabs destroyed them themselves. Okay, so that's his setup for the introduction, and he has the next part which deals with the concept of what is the prohibition, what is the issue of destroying a Bet Knesset. So the Rambam writes in Sefer HaMitzvot. I'm sorry, you don't have it. You have the Rambam writes Sefer HaMitzvot in the Loita Sesamache 65. He says the following. His lashon is very midriyak. Hisiranu minatut me'aved bate avodat hakel itale. Jews are commanded, okay, to not destroy and not to remove, so to speak, literally the word Bate Avodot, houses of worship, Hakel Yitzareh for Hashem. Umeabed Sifrei HaNebuah Umilchemet Hashem, Hashemot, in order to destroy Sifrei Nevi'im, Umilchot Hashemot, and to erase God's name, Hanichbadim Ve'adomo Elazeh. ולשון ההזרה שבא בזה עניין הוא אמרו, where do we learn this out from? The pasuk says, לא תעשו כן להשם לכם, don't do this to Hashem your God. וכל מי שעבר הדבר הזה, says the Rambam Berkeley in Sefer Mitzvot, anyone who does this, כגון שירוש שום דבר מן ההיכל והמזבח ואדומה להם. He does something like this to the היכל or to the מזבח, או שימחה שם משמות ההם, שמות השם, excuse me, לא כן. So there's, he says, Lechora midavav yeshadayek, says Rav Yaakov Ariel. From here, the Rambam seems to be medayek. Shegam netisat batei kneset arsam etorah. That also the destruction of a shul is an issan of a Torah. Why? Sharehem michlar batei avodah le'elit yaleh. How else do you define what you're standing in right now? This is a house of worship. So that is the umbrella category of a bet kneset as well, of a shul. But when he comes to illustrate examples of what this is, he refers to the Echal, he refers to the Mizbeach. You can make the argument that a Batei Knesset, a synagogue, is also included in that list. So he suggests, if this is the intent of the Rambam, where's his Mekor? Mekoro b'dasha Chazal. It's Gemara Megillah, Daf Kafchet. Gemara Megillah says, V'hashemoti et mikdashchem. You should destroy my mikdash. And the Gemara goes on to learn, kedushatan af keshen shomimim, that even in their state of desolation, even during when they're in a pile of rubble, so to speak, there's still the sanctity and the reverence that still exists. Shehakavana hui lebatei kneset shechavo. The Gemara in there, in the context, is referring to a synagogue that's been destroyed. Kem muchach gam kem minashon Rambam min yam mitzvos. And actually, the Rambam is much more clear when he enumerates this in the Minyan HaMitzvah Shebetichas Sefer HaYad HaChazaka, in the beginning of Yad HaChazaka Mitzvah Samachay, there he says very clearly, and I'll quote his words, Shelo le'abed bet ha'kmikdash o bet kenesiyot u'batem midrashot shenemar lo ta'as unken la'ashom lekechem. The Rambam is brutally clear. You're not allowed to destroy a shul, you can't destroy Beit HaMidrash, because we have a pasuk in the Torah, lo ta'as unken la'ashom lekechem.
What if you knew they were going to be used for
Avodah Zarah? Okay, so he deals with that. The question is whether a mosque is Avodah Zarah or not. He'll deal with that.
Okay, so Muslims are not. But if it was a case of...
Well, that's itself debatable, but yes. So he'll deal with that. The Bizayon Yotel, we're going to deal with that. And it's Rav Reichsa and Rav Katzenellenbogen, it's coming up. I want you to see their words because they're so powerful. Hopefully you'll have the sources soon. You told me 15 minutes, so. Achadayin Sarachiyun. Why? Ki yitaken shebatei hakneset ena batei avodat. You could make the case, says Rabbi Yaakov, maybe. Batei avodat, houses of worship, don't include shuls. Ubitui zeh, besef ha-mitzvah nechuven rak mishkan u-beramot bizman etaran. And when he's enumerating this in Sefer HaMitzvot, he's only referring to the Mishkan and the Bamot, the altars that were allowed at that time. V'chen mucha b'ilchotam. And actually, this is meduyak in the halachot. The Rambam says in Ilchot Yisudei HaTorah, in Perek Vav, Halacha Zayin, Sham lo yizkir sheyesh yisud d'oraita l'sof bet kneset. There, he doesn't say there's an itzah midoraisa to destroy a shul. El rak et yisur l'sof d'echal. Therefore, he only says that the prohibition to destroy the heichal, or the misbeach, or the shara azara, any other part of the azara. Even to destroy one brick, one stone, in a destructive way. So firstly, that's debatable. And then he says, however, lumato. On the other hand, Harambam, the Rambam in Megillah, and the Rif, and the Ran as well. Savur shekedushas bechzakaneset him b'derbana. In essence, it's a whole debate in itself. Discussion in and of itself, excuse me, the kedusha that exists nowadays in a shul is only midrabban. V'chen mashem emrov rishonim. This is the approach of the majority of the rishonim. Umimele itaken loymar sharisat betakneset eno asu midrabban. And therefore, there is this suggestion to say that maybe the destruction of a shul is not midrabban. Miugami maniyah. So notwithstanding, is it is the raisa is the rabbanan? At the end of the day. Gami maniyah sheyisu midrabanan. Even if you're going to make the case that destroying a shul is midrabanan, and safek sheyesh parisatam pegiya chamura bichvod shamayim ubiyichud keshadavar naaseh bepumi. there's still a tremendous affront, disgrace, okay, about someone that has to destroy a shul. You can make the case, it's midaraisa, midarabanan, but at the end of the day, what you're doing is a terrible thing. No one's going to debate that. Right, but if you look through the poskim, the question is, what is that kedusha? What the kedusha that exists nowadays? The Mikdash Me'at, so we have the mini temple in the diaspora, that's all we've got. How do we view the kedusha in it? And that has ramifications to halacha in terms of once it's destroyed, does it remain, does it not remain? So he'll deal with all of this. But just to get to your point, because this is what he deals with now in the third chalik here. So he says the following. Notra she'ela, ha'im adif b'makom she'lo nota b'ra, in a situation where the halacha is unclear, is it better she'yasu zot goyim? Is it better that the shul should be destroyed by the non-Jews? Which I was saying with tremendous venom and vengeance and against everything that represents Jewish life. Or maybe the Jews should do it themselves. So he says the following. Shvut Yaakov was a Yaakov Reicher who lived in 16, I wrote it in my notes here, 1661 to 1713. He was born in Prague. He was the Rav of Worms and the Rav of Metz. And he wrote the Minchas Yaakov as well, which is halacha on Sefer on Kashrus, and also the Gevurah Sari, okay, for those who are familiar with it, on the Pirush Rashi and Torah. But he's well known for Shuvot on called Shvut Yaakov. Shvut Yaakov in Chelek Gimel Simen Yud. He says the following: Binyan Kidvei Hakodesh Ganzum BeChaviot Gedolot VeNichum BeBet HaKavod. What's happening there at that time when he was the chief rabbi of Worms? So the Shemus, as we call them, right, Genizot. Parchments of Sifrei Torah, worn out Sidurim, worn out Svarim and books, right? You have to go, you have to bury them. To bury them. So what they used to put them in large barrels, they used to put them in the cemetery. But what was happening is, the non-Jews in the town would steal them. Why would they be stealing them? So we think that burying them, oh, that's also a terrible thing. The least you can do, you bury them with a bit of respect. But it was becoming that these things that they were burying were arriving at worse disgrace. He elaborates, if you look in his words, even more. They were using them always as toilet paper. They were using them for the horrific things that we wouldn't even think of using. Okay, so the question becomes, if you would take these parchments of Sifrei Torah and take these worn out Svarim and, you know, Gemaras and Sidurim and burn them, hayum onayim otam bizayon. So then you're preventing further disgrace to Divrei Kedusha. So that was his question. What do you think? Two schools of thought. You think he allowed it or he didn't allow it? Ma atem omrim? Harabanim hachashuvim po? You're nodding your head. Is that a yes or no? What? Sorry? That wasn't the option. And there was a precedent for this in Prague and other places as well, yeah.
Both options are unpleasant, therefore Sheval Tasa.
Okay, so here's Maskanato, he sheyesh la'atir lisrof et kivei HaKodesh kedei limnoa mehem bizayon gadol yoter. He has a long tshuva, it's worth seeing. I haven't got a modern version of it, so the print is very, very small and very unclear. But it's worth learning his tshuva. But he goes ahead and he says it's permitted. It's permitted to go ahead and burn the Sifrei Kodesh. Why? Because then you're preventing worse disgrace. Now, he brings several different places in Europe, including Prague, if I recall, that this was the minhag. Lisrof et ataon geniza, those things that need the geniza, don't stuff them in a bin outside, Rabbi Tungtav Shul, okay? Just to put them in a big bonfire. The chalas, as they say in Arab. Bimkom shelo litafshel lingzot bikvod, ukashul shem yizriku lebesop bimkom tinfor. Maybe they will arrive in a place which is more disgraced and more dirty. That's happened many times in the Jewish world. So therefore, he says that it's permitted. Now, what's his raya? So one of the biggest rayas he brings is from the episode with Shaul HaMelech. With Shaul HaMelech, she'adif le'abed atzmo ladat. Whole debate in halacha is a Jew allowed to commit suicide or not. It's a whole discussion in and of itself. What circumstances allow it, what circumstances don't allow it. Generally, of course, halacha frowns upon it. But in that particular case, the Pasuk says that in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Lamed Aleph, Pen Yavo Ha'arelim Ha'ele Utkaruni Bitalulubi. Shaul HaMelech made the case, I'll fall on my spear and kill myself rather than allow the Pelishtim to take hold of my corpse and, you know, Hitalulubi, they'll make a mockery of me in front of everyone. Ve'itiru lo la'arog atzmo biyadav ve'lamut mitakala. He allowed himself, therefore, to die an easier, quick death, כדי שלא יערוג ביד הפלישתים במיתה משונה וחמורה. In order not to die, more severe, extreme death of torture, anguish, and pain at the hands of the Palestinians. וגדולה מזו, התירו לו שהיה אין מדובר שם על חשש ודאי. So more than that, here we're not talking about a חשש ודאי, אלא רק על ספק פן יבוא. If you look at the words of Shaul HaMelech, Shaul HaMelech says, פן יבוא, maybe they will come and make a mockery of my body. ואף על פי כן רשאי היה להעמיד את עצמו בידיו, and nonetheless, you see a precedent there which is used in different areas of Halacha, that he was allowed to kill himself. והוסיף שמעשה זה שנתינת נשמה, And Rav Reicher adds that this idea of taking a neshama away from a human being, shakul l'shrifat sefer Torah, equates to the burning of a sefer Torah. Kefi shemuchach memasechet Shabbat, as the Gemara in Shabbat Kuf Hei, Amud Beis, v'dami mamash nidon nidan. And therefore he says it's exactly comparable to our case. And we'll see how this applies to Gush Katif. That's on the one side. On the flip side, ach b'kineset Yechezkel, the Knesset Yechezkel was written by Yechezkel Katzenelenbogen, whose name I did not know until I moved into his street in Har Nov, but probably the longest street name in Israel. Okay, he lived in 1670 to 1749. He was a rabbi in Hamburg. So he writes in Knesset Yechezkel, Cholek Alav. He argues on the Shulz Yaakov. Ve'oser limno abizayon chamur shekidvei ha-kodesh al-yidei sefer adam. He said, you cannot go ahead and burn Sifrei Kodesh in order to prevent a greater disgrace. So what about the proof from Shaul HaMelech? He says, the proof from Shaul HaMelech, he says, there's other reasons why he was allowed to do it. Whether you take the Maharal's approach that Shaul HaMelech was concerned for the lives of tens of thousands of other Jews, that were going to risk their lives, and will try and save him. So he wanted to prevent that happening, that's the Maharal's approach. So therefore, in order to save tens of thousands, so there's a halachic license to save one life. Or you can make the case that actually committing suicide is not as bad as murder. And under certain circumstances that we should never know, they are permitted to prevent further outcomes which are more strict. And therefore the proof from Shaul HaMelech, he says, requires further understanding. Because if according to the Shulz Yaakov, he is of the opinion that a person that commits suicide is considered like mamash murder, show me one precedent in Torah, anywhere in Torah literature, anywhere in Torah, any in the Gemara, show me one precedent that murder is permitted in order to prevent something which is more extreme from happening. Like something which is disgrace or mockery. Even the greatest accolade in the Jewish world, which is saving Jewish life, which supersedes everything. Saving a Jewish life supersedes everything. Even Mechal Shabbos, even for Safek, Pikuach Nefesh, you break Shabbos. Nonetheless, Eno Doche Isur Achitza. It doesn't push off murder. Sheken En Doche Nefesh Mipin En Nefesh. Gemara says very clear, you don't push off one nefesh for another nefesh. There's no license to commit suicide just to prevent, okay, a greater disgrace.
This doesn't get them there. The girls and boys who threw themselves into the water of the boat in order they shouldn't come to Znis. So then they took their lives in order shouldn't be suffered.
Because that's one of the three... Yeah. Nachon. But he's saying just as a precedent itself, you can't say that there's a heter to murder in order to prevent something which is more extreme that's about to happen.
So, anyway.
Sorry.
Anyway.
Okay, so he'll deal with that. So now we have to stop now and we'll continue in part two next time. Yeah. I apologize, but that, we'll pick it up. But nonetheless, this is his build up to show how this would apply to a certain extent to exactly what happened 20 years ago in Gush Katif. And the outcome, again, there's a lot more to say about it, but this is just part one. We'll pick it up in the next step.
What actually happened there? What was it?
What?
There were.
One second.
The story is, they took off part of Gaza, and they had to leave. Kick them all out. The Israelis.